Yesterday, President Trump posted on Truth Social that Russia and Ukraine were very close to a peace deal. Just a few days ago, after Russia's deadly airstrikes on Kyiv, Trump addressed Russian President Vladimir Putin by posting, "Vladimir, stop." Trump said he was, quote, not happy about the strikes. It was a rare rebuke. U.S.-Russia relations have been more upbeat since Trump took office. And as NPR's Charles Maines reports from Moscow, there is a strong desire to cut business deals with the Kremlin.
Donald Trump returned to the White House, promising to shake up Biden-era policies towards Russia and its war in Ukraine. And shake them up, Trump has.
We had a great call, and it lasted for a long time, over an hour.
Within weeks of taking office, Trump picked up the phone and ended Biden's three-year diplomatic isolation of Russian President Vladimir Putin.
For him, Trump was a blessing in disguise.
Abbas Galyamov is a former speechwriter for Putin, turned government critic in exile. Galyamov says Trump's decision to reach out came just in time for Putin, at a moment when Russia's economy and public support for the war was starting to sputter.
Everything was very grim. The perspectives were very bad. And all of a sudden, Trump appeared. Oh my God, finally you heard my prayers. This is the attitude.
And perhaps with reason.
The United States does not believe that NATO membership for Ukraine is a realistic outcome of a negotiated settlement.
And perhaps with reason. Within days, Trump's Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, ruled out any future NATO membership for Ukraine and said Kyiv would likely have to cede territory to Russia, two key Kremlin demands. Soon, Trump went further, publicly blaming Ukraine and NATO's expansion into Eastern Europe for pushing Russia into war. Even in the Kremlin, it seemed everything was suddenly turned upside down. The White House not only embracing a Russian worldview, it appeared to be pushing for peace in Ukraine on Moscow's terms. The new administration is rapidly changing all foreign policy configurations, noted Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov in an interview on state television in March. And this new Trump approach, Peskov added, largely coincides with our vision. Kremlin propagandists have embraced the shift.
Trump пилит западный мир.
Programs that once crackled with anti-American rhetoric now celebrate Trump's actions. These days, hostility is now squarely aimed at Europe over its continued support for Ukraine.
Маски спали. Мы видим, что за этой войной стоит Европа в полный рост.
The masks are off, and now we see that Europe is the one truly behind the war, says Vladimir Solovyov, one of the Kremlin's key messengers in a recent program. Ilya Yablokov, a scholar on Russian disinformation, says the media's recasting of heroes and villains has been sudden but not necessarily disorienting for a propaganda machine forever in search of an enemy.
Once the Americans are replaced by the Europeans, for the daily work of the so-called Russian media worker, because I cannot call them journalists, nothing's changed. It's just one single piece of the puzzle is replaced by the another. Of the same shape.
Against this backdrop, the U.S. and Russia have engaged in a series of high-level meetings about ending the war, leaving Ukraine and Europe largely on the sidelines. Two nuclear powers deciding the fate of Europe has provided optics straight out of the Cold War, only with results far less grand. Putin rejected a Trump-backed ceasefire proposal following a second phone call in March, praising Trump's peace efforts in theory, but demanding an end to all Western military support for Ukraine. Critics accuse Putin of feigning support for limited ceasefires, in effect dragging out negotiations, while continuing to push for Ukraine's capitulation on the battlefield. Sergei Politaev, a supporter of the war effort who runs the Russian political and security analytics blog Vatfor, agrees.
Yes. Of course we see Putin is playing for time. And why is rather obvious. We haven't reached all our goals militarily, and therefore it's not in our interest to stop.
As we talk in a Moscow park, Politaev tells me he rejects the idea that Trump has given the Kremlin anything by way of concessions. The American leader simply has no choice, says Politaev, but to accept Russia's gains on the battlefield for what they are and what they could still be. The Kremlin is certain that if we keep fighting, we'll not only gain more, he tells me, but actually achieve the very thing over which this whole conflict started. The underlying message, Russia will get its way, either through negotiations or by force. But if Putin is in little mood for concessions to Ukraine, he's offering plenty, to the U.S.
Мы, кстати говоря, готовы были бы предложить и американским нашим партнерам.
From investments in minerals to prisoner exchanges, even offers to help the U.S. in talks with Iran. Other Russian deals are very much on the table. A key player in all this, Kremlin envoy Kirill Dmitriev. American-educated and the current head of Russia's sovereign wealth investment fund, Dmitriev has emerged a relentlessly upbeat voice, calling for a new era of U.S.-Russian relations built on business and trade, as he explained in an interview with Fox News during a visit to Washington earlier this month.
So I think one of the big issues between us, we never had really lots of economic cooperation. We believe that economic cooperation will allow us to also solve any political issues and be positive. And I think that positive economic cooperation can happen with President Trump's team.
Gulyamov, the former Putin speechwriter, says it's all part of a Kremlin effort to expand negotiations and keep Trump's frustration over a lack of progress on Ukraine at bay.
Since Trump allows himself to be seduced, tempted by this nice proposals, why not? They discussed business and Trump no longer presses. So this is the strategy of Putin.
In central Moscow, just outside the U.S. embassy, a series of giant pro-war signs promise an inevitable Russian victory, with slogans like "We're United" and a giant letter Z, the Kremlin's chosen symbol of support for the invasion.
And not only that, war recruitment posters are everywhere, on street billboards, in the shops.
It's a reminder that for all the frenetic diplomacy of the past few months, Russia is still very much a country engaged in what it sees as a proxy war with the West, and America in particular. On a nearby street, Olga Grishaeva, a retired engineer, tells me her expectations for change and Trump remain low. Everything he's doing for America, she says. For Russia, it's the same as it was before. The U.S. still gives weapons to Kyiv and tells them where to fire. Artyom Arlyov, a university student, says he doesn't know if the U.S. and Russia will get along, but argues it's not just up to Trump. The American public, he tells me, also has to want peace with Russia. And some argue there's more than geopolitics at play. Mikhail, a licensed psychologist, offers a diagnosis, but not his last name, citing concern about reprisals from the government for both. Trump is a narcissist, he says, and narcissists are by definition unstable. If Trump doesn't get what he wants from Putin, he adds, things could end up a lot worse for Russia than they ever were under Biden. Put another way, no one knows how Trump will react to Putin's mix of slow-walking negotiations on Ukraine and sweet-talking deals elsewhere. The answer may depend on how much America's famously transactional president can appreciate Putin's own art of the deal. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.